Desai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Dear listeners, loving Sai Ram and greetings. You are tuned to Asia's stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Coming to you, and this today's segment, Service Love in Action, is coming to you straight from Prashanthi Nilayam live. And I'm Raghu from Team Radio Sai, and I welcome you all for today's Thursday live. Well, today is 13th of March 2014, and the time right now in our studio is 11 a.m. It's a beautiful morning here at Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram, the spiritual capital of the universe, the abode of highest peace. This is a segment, Service Love in Action, in which we bring you accounts of Swami's love and our love for Swami translating into service to humanity. That is, we have conversations with individuals who are touched by Swami's teachings of service to society, and we bring you the experiences by the devotees who are involved in some or the other service activities in whatever capacity they can, wherever they are. Well, right now here at Prashanthi Nilayam, the devotees who have come here to Prashanthi Nilayam for Prashanthi Seva are from the Indian state of Maharashtra. As you all may be knowing, Prashanthi Seva is an activity where devotees from all over India come to Prashanthi Nilayam for different service activities. And they keep changing every 15 days. Devotees come from different states of India. And as I said, this month it's the turn of the state Maharashtra. Well, talking about Prashanthi Seva and the Sevadas, I am reminded of an incident which was narrated by Mr. Suresh Bhatt from Gujarat. He had come here to Prashanthi Nilayam for Prashanthi Seva 1 year, and he was appointed duty in Swami's Super Speciality Hospital here at Prashanthi Gram. So he was doing his Sevadal duty in the entrance of the hospital, and during the day it seems he saw a lady in the hospital who was very, very happy. She was smiling in her own way, and it seemed as if she was ecstatic and was in a sort of state of bliss. So Mr. Suresh Bhatt was curious to know the reason, so he went to her and asked for the reason, why, what made her so happy. That time the lady said that it seems that time her son was undergoing an open heart surgery in the hospital. Well, Mr. Suresh Bhatt was taken aback because it's such a serious operation, and he asked the lady that your son is undergoing such a severe operation and you are not worried, you are not tensed, you are so happy. For this the lady said that it seems Sai Ram had already told her that her son will be all right, that the operation will be fine. Now dear listeners, I am sure you all will be thinking that when the lady said Sai Ram has told her that her son will be fine, you all will be thinking that Swami has told her the son will be fine, right? But what the lady meant by telling that Sai Ram has told her that her son will be fine was that one Sevadal in the hospital had told her that her son will be perfectly fine. That is, when her son was taken to the operation theater, she was very tense, and that time some Sevadal consoled her and assured her that her son will be perfectly fine. And these words, she had taken it as Swami's word, and she had left all the tension and worries. So you see, dear listeners, this is the importance given to Sevadal and the people who do service to society. And because of this bliss, people engage in service activities. So in this segment, we try to capture these lovely experiences of devotees who are involved in service activities. So stay tuned. In fact, last week, if you are there with me, I had played for you a conversation that Radio Sai's Bishop Prashti had with the state president of the Sri Sai Seva Organization of the Indian state of Orissa, Mr. Jagannath Prasad Rao. And in that conversation, Jagannath Prasad Rao sir had told us about the many service initiatives that the Sai Organization of the Indian state of Orissa have taken as part of Swami's 90th birthday, which happens to be next year, that is 2015. Many service initiatives, many inspiring and devotional service initiatives. So, if I mention few like the Shatakoti Likhita Nama Japam, where they have undertaken a project where all the devotees all over Orissa will write Swami's name, that is Om Sri Sai Ram, and they want to finish writing Swami's name 100 crore times by Swami's 90th birthday. Today, in this episode of Service Live in Action, I'll be playing for you a panel discussion on selfless service, which was held at the Mid-Atlantic Mini-Retreat in New Jersey on 25th February 2012. So stay tuned. In fact, in between, I'll also be talking about Florence Nightingale as part of the section You Can Make a Difference, where we speak about, where I talk about some great personality who have made a difference in the society by their humanitarian work. In fact, last week also I was speaking about Florence Nightingale, but because of time constraint, I had not yet finished talking about her. So today I'll be continuing talking about Florence Nightingale. So let's begin this segment listening to a beautiful Sai bhajan.
बाल गोपाला साई बाल गोपाला बाल गोपाला साई बाल गोपाला
Oh, no.
Sai Gopala.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
11:12 a.m. It's a beautiful warm morning here at Prashant Nilayam Ashram, the spiritual capital of the universe. Today is 13th of March 2014, and the climate here at Prashant Nilayam is not so cool, it's not so warm, it's something in between. In fact, the summer season is coming, that's in the months of April and May, and the temperature is slowly rising. In fact, it's peak in the afternoon, and the temperature is about 35 degrees Celsius. So this is a segment, Service Love in Action, and I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. And under this section, You Can Make a Difference, today I am going to continue talking about Florence Nightingale. So as I said last week, during the Crimean War, Florence Nightingale gained the nickname, the Lady with the Lamb, from a phrase in a report in the Times, and I quote, "She is the ministering angel without any exaggeration in these hospitals. As her slender form glides quietly along each corridor, every poor fellow's face softens with gratitude at the sight of her. When all the medical officers have retired for the night and silence and darkness have settled down upon those miles of prostrate sick, she may be observed alone with a little lamp in her hand, making her solitary rounds." Unquote. Hence the nickname, the Lady with the Lamp. The phrase was further popularized by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's poem, Santa Philomena, and it goes like this. "Lo, in that house of misery, a lady with a lamp I see pass through the glimmering gloom and flit from room to room." In the Crimea, on 29th November 1855, the Nightingale Fund was established for the training of nurses during a public meeting to recognize Nightingale for her work in the war. There was an outpouring of generous donations. Sidney Herbert served as honorary secretary of the fund and the Duke of Cambridge was chairman. Nightingale was considered a pioneer in the concept of medical tourism as well, based on her 1856 letters describing spas in the Ottoman Empire. She detailed the health conditions, physical descriptions, dietary information, and other vital details of patients whom she directed there. The treatment there was significantly less expensive than in Switzerland. From the Nightingale Fund, she set up the Nightingale Training School at St. Thomas Hospital on 9th July 1860. The first trained nurses began work on 16th May 1865 at the Liverpool Workhouse, now called the Florence Nightingale School of Nursing and Midwifery. The school is part of King's College London. She also campaigned and raised funds for the Royal Buckingham Hospital in Aylesbury near sister's house, Clarendon House. So last week we had stopped here, speaking about Florence Nightingale's life, her career and work. In fact, in the year 1859, she wrote a book, that is, Notes on Nursing. The book served as the cornerstone of the curriculum at the Nightingale School and other nursing schools. Though it was written specifically for the education of those nursing at home. In that book she wrote, and I quote, "Every day sanitary knowledge, or the knowledge of nursing, or in other words, of how to put the constitution in such a state as that it will have no disease, or that it can recover from disease, takes a higher place. It is recognized as the knowledge which everyone ought to have, distinct from medical knowledge which only a professional can have." Unquote. So her book, Notes on Nursing, also sold well to the general reading public and is considered a classic introduction to nursing. Nightingale spent the rest of her life promoting and organizing the nursing profession. In the introduction to the 1974 edition, John Quixley of the Nightingale School of Nursing wrote, and I quote, "The book was the first of its kind ever to be written. It appeared at a time when the simple rules of health were only beginning to be known, when its topics were of vital importance not only for the well-being and recovery of patients, when hospitals were riddled with infection, when nurses were still mainly regarded as ignorant, uneducated persons. The book has inevitably its place in the history of nursing, for it was written by the founder of modern nursing, Florence Nightingale." Unquote. So, dear listeners, well, this is a segment Service Live in Action, and I'm Raghu from Team Radio SI, and we'll continue talking about Florence Nightingale, but let me now come to the icing on cake of today's segment of Service Live in Action. As I said, it is a panel discussion on selfless service held at Mid-Atlantic Midney Retreat in New Jersey on 25th February 2012. So let's, for some time, for maybe half an hour or so, listen to this panel discussion. And again, after that, we'll come back to Florence Nightingale's life and her career and her humanitarian work.
Now, we're going to have a panel discussion. This panel will be moderated by Edith Billup. Edith is a journalist. She's a media relations person, consultant, and arts reviewer. And this last part of her job assignment I like the best. She's an international travel writer. She gets to visit cool places and write about them. She also serves as the Region 2 service article collector for an upcoming website, Love in Action. By Swami's grace, she was one of the fortunate ones to be in Haiti and serve Swami in all the people that were there. She was part of the team 9 that went from USA. And last year, she also helped us out tremendously with Walk for Values, raising awareness of this walk amongst our community members. So if I can request Edith to come up and get our panelists together. Sign up.
Sairam, everyone, and welcome to this afternoon's panel discussion. I give my sincere thanks and love to Sri Satya Sai Baba, who in his infinite grace has allowed me to be here today. I know that we are all very excited about hearing from our distinguished guests and panelists, who I know will share some insight into how we all can better serve with more humility and grace. Joining us on this panel is Dr. Harry Jibram from Michigan. He serves as a regional president and medical director for Region 5 USA. He also is a member of the International Medical Committee of the Sri Satya Sai Organization. Dr. Ganesh Yadlapali from Cincinnati is the coordinator of the Sri Satya Sai International Center for Medical Services and the Sri Satya Sai International Medical Camps, and also the medical director for Region 1 USA. He was instrumental in publishing a medical textbook to educate physicians practicing in developing countries. This, one of the first medical tech books to be dedicated to our beloved Swami, was blessed by Swami during his 85th birthday celebrations. Dr. Indira Hewlett from Washington, D.C., came to Swami's fold at 6 years of age in 1960 and received Swami's guidance through the many personal interactions she was blessed to have. Swami advised her in her career choice to be a scientist and led her to the current position in the U.S. FDA, where she has worked for more than 25 years. Dr. Faiz Muhammad is from Trinidad and Tobago, and he became a member of the Sri Satya Sai Baba Organization in 1979. By his grace, he has had an opportunity to participate in Sai service around the world, and also has served as the National Youth Coordinator and the National Spiritual Coordinator of Trinidad and Tobago. Let's give them a great, great hand. We'd like to open up this panel discussion by having all of the panelists to relate some of their experiences in the Divine Presence, if possible. And we can start on the left.
Sairam, everyone. You know, if you look at it, over the past 1 year has been like a major change in our lives with the departure of Swami from his physical body. But if you look at it, I'll just give you a few slides just to give the glimpses of what Swami's life has been. Swami's life has been, first the Swami, you know, declared himself that he is a God. And then as a result, most of us, who are the fortunate, was able to go to Swami and have a darshan of Swami, have his darshan and sambhashan. And then Swami, what Swami did is amazing is, then we thought, realize that, okay, his life is his message. Then the things happen. Then Swami, what Swami did is, no, you don't have to touch my feet. You and me are the same. That's the biggest message. That's like one of the mind-boggling thing that Swami, which is like a, that was like a turning point in the Swami's mission. He's really emphasizing the point that you are the embodiments of love. You are the embodiments of God. If you look at it, the transformation that is the basis for Swami's life is that one. You know, Swami says, in the Rama time, all the bad lives in one place, good lived in one place. So it's easy for the Swami to take care of the bad. In the Krishna time, they all live together in the one place, but they're in the separate bodies. So it's much little bit easier. But in Kali Yuga time, Swami's mission has been very difficult, and only way he could uplift the good is by the transformation. That transformation, the milestone, I think, is that point. Swami is not letting everybody to touch his feet, saying that, no, you don't have to touch your feet. You are God, I am God. Then we were thinking was, okay, his wife is his message, and then slowly we have to move on to the next step, that is, our life is his message. Thus, sort of, as a result of the transformation. Then, if you're saying that our life is his message, that means you are really saying, my life is his message. That means we are both, we are two different entities. No, we are not two different entities. With the same form, then Swami left the physical body, saying that, you know, I'm not the physical body. Then the thing, now the big transformation comes up is, his life is his message. What it really says is, his, who's sitting in you, in each and every one of you, whatever you do, that's his message. His body is his message. Thank you.
Hi Ram. Swami has said, many of you come to me for petty tinsel and trash. Very few of you have come to ask of me what I have come to give, which is liberation. But he's such a compassionate and loving mother that he says, I give you what you want so that you could want what I have come to give. And I learned this lesson in a most dramatic way. In one of the interviews, I sat at 2 feet away from his chair and was observing the handkerchief that hangs on his chair and was thinking, Swami, how nice this would look in my prayer room. And then my monkey mind started to play tricks. Should I take it? Should I ask for it? Should I steal it? And as these thoughts were going through my mind, Swami took the handkerchief, wiped his brow and mouth and looked at me straight into my eyes and put it back. But the monkey mind kept going through that whole interview. When the interview was completed, Swami, as the perfect host, would stand at the door and usher out lovingly all the interviewees. And as this was happening, I stealthily crept up to the chair and with my left hand I took the handkerchief. As I was walking out, Swami is looking at me in a very serious mood. And I said, Swami, I took the handkerchief. He said, Acha, acha, go. But it was 15 years after I would learn a very powerful lesson. A Vrindavan bhajan singer came to Trinidad to do some programs. And he related an incident with the handkerchief that was almost similar to mine, except the ending. He also sat at Swami's feet and was watching the handkerchief. And his monkey mind was also asking, should I take it? Should I steal it? Should I ask for it? But he finally mustered up enough courage to ask Swami, Swami, should I take the handkerchief? And he says the most amazing thing happened. Swami's entire face changed. His color of his skin became like copper and bronze and his eyes were bulging. And he said that he just felt this love of Swami oozing out of his face straight into his eyes. And Swami told him, take me instead. So my dear friends, let us really ask of the Lord what he has come to give us. Liberation. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, everyone. One of the things in terms of experiences, Swami always gives us so much when we work together, and over the years he's really graced us, medical teams, when we go to Parthi to do medical service, and in different ways, not always physically. But he's also shown us that he's been there each time. But one of the, probably the most significant experiences that we've had as a group was after the 85th birthday celebration. And one of the things, we start off the medical camp every day in the beginning with prayers. And we've always notice that the garlands on Swami's picture, they fall during the bhajans, devotional singing in the beginning, and then one of the ladies or the gents goes back, ties it really tight, and then it falls again. Telling us beyond that he's there, no matter what we do, he's still showing his presence. And this time, during the 85th birthday celebrations, your mind starts playing games. So the first day, I was expecting the garland to fall, and after the prayers, nothing happened, actually. And then, right away, we have Dr. Reddy, he walks in, and he says, Swami actually sent me to give you all this. So he's again showing us this grace, and he actually, from Swami's home, brought us this vibhuti for all the team members. Once the camp was over that particular day, we got news that Swami wanted to see us in the mandir. We all went, and this was the 24th November. It was actually Swami's actual birthday. This was a Thursday. And Swami came and spent so much time with us. He actually came and spent time with each and every one of us. He went to the ladies' side. We thought he was actually leaving. He came back again. And again went to each and every one of us and distributed vibhuti to each one of us individually. And he had some bhashan in it. He talked with some people. And it was such a beautiful incident. And we really didn't understand the impact of it at that time. Later on we found out one of the Sai brothers from Indiana actually had a dream that previous night where Swami came to him and he told our brother, now I'm going to give you a very, very, very grand exit. Once he was done with us, he actually came to the front of the veranda. The musical team, the choir team, was supposed to perform for the second time. And Swami just took aarti and left. It was a very special event for us. I think he has in so many ways, when we do our service, how he acknowledges it, but also shows us in different ways. I mean, this is a very special setting for us. It's something we would never forget in our lives, the time he has spent with us that particular afternoon. Something for all of us to remember that these experiences that we have experienced and continue to experience as of today will continue to happen. And I think that's probably one thing we all have to leave this conference today keeping in mind. This is just the beginning of a very, very grand beginning. Sairam.
Sairam, everyone. I'd first like to offer my most humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami and to thank Swami for the opportunity to be here and to participate in this service mini retreat. I'm very much in awe and impressed by the many things we heard this morning about the various global seva activities that our Sai organization is doing. I will say that I feel very blessed in other ways in that I came to the Sai fold as a very young child. I was 6 years old when I first came to the physical presence of our Swami after my father's passing and had many opportunities to have very close and personal interactions with our Swami back in the 60s. This is in 1960, was when we first came to Swami. And back in those days, as someone said, Swami was very accessible and he wanted to have access to the devotees. So he called us in and talked with us about many, many topics, including character development and education and career choices and so on. And in fact, was the one who advised me to study for my doctorate. I wanted to be a medical doctor, and he said, no, that's not what you're going to be. You should be a scientist. Primarily because I felt that was a very good way to serve Baba. But he said, you're going to serve in the capacity of education. Get your highest degree and, you know, you will have the opportunity as you go along. There were two points of transformation in my life. Of course, being a child growing up with Swami, there were many experiences and there's a lot to talk about. And of course, the feelings and the impressions on a child's mind are really quite amazing when you're in the presence of someone as awesome as our Swami. But there were two points of transformation. One was when I was an adolescent, actually when I was 18 years old, attending the first summer course in spirituality in 1972. And it was my first exposure to Swami's intense fondness for service, because we had at least five or six opportunities in the day to do different types of service, including sweeping the grounds or cooking, cleaning the dishes, setting the table, the floor ready for food, getting the mic ready for the speeches and so on. But you could see that Swami wanted us to do these things, and he would come around and talk about how important it was for the young, we didn't say young adults back then, but for the youth of the country to get involved in these types of service activities, the goal being that it gets rid of our ego. And I think this has been touched upon by everybody here. The second transformation came a little bit later when I was 25, after I'd finished my PhD. And I spent many months, actually about 8 months in the ashram, and really experienced the true divinity of Swami. And Swami as the higher Atma. It was a very eye-opening awakening. And I carried that with me throughout my life. And I think I view service as every little act that we do. There are projects, there are service projects, there are service activities. Basically, everything we do, even when we are sitting quietly, thinking thoughts, when we think good thoughts and not think bad thoughts, we're doing service. So we should think of every little thing that we do in our lives as an act of service, because Baba says the service is not for him, it's for us to grow spiritually. And so I think for this mini retreat and this session we're going into, those would be some of the types of things that I hope we will come out of this discussion, so that when we go back, we'll focus more on reducing our egos and desires and increase our humility and compassion towards each other and the Sai fold, and of course towards the community overall. Sai Ram.
Thank you for those very insightful opening thoughts. This question is directed towards Brother Fies and Dr. Indira. Is service a project or a way of life? And Brother Fies, can you start?
Swami has said that the most important and valuable acquisition in a spiritual aspirant's life is character. And when he emphasizes this, character is simply doing good, seeing good, and being good. We may be involved in specific service projects, but it goes way beyond this. When our very lives become a divine expression of selfless service, then we are living for Him. In a Mahashivaratri discourse many years ago, Swami spoke about the inner significance of the outward items that are used to worship Lord Shiva. And he said the leaf represents our bodies, which have to be used in the selfless service of humanity. The flower is our heart, filled with love and devotion, which can be offered at his lotus feet. The fruit is our minds, which has to be surrendered to him. And the water represents the tears of bhakti, the tears of devotion that flow from the eyes of the devotee when he is in ecstatic communion with the Lord. So what Swami really wants from us is not so much the physical offerings, but for our lives to become the offering worthy of being placed at his lotus feet. So service is not limited only to one project. It is a continuous expression of divine love in thought, word, and deed. And this is what really Swami wants from us. Sai Ram.
Yes, Swami has said that we should engage in selfless service, and is it just a project or is it a way of life? Usually we tend to think of service as activities and projects, only because we tend to think of it as something outside of us. And sometimes we say there's no time for service. I'm too busy working, you know, I may not be able to do environmental seva, or I may not be able to sort clothes this weekend, or I can't cut vegetables, or I can't do Narayana seva. I'm too busy. But Swami says that is not the only type of service that we should limit ourselves to. In fact, he has made a statement, and I think it's in the book Yoga of Action, that we don't really need to go out there and clean the streets. Not everybody needs to be doing that. We should do it, of course, go into the villages, especially in India. It's a big service activity that goes on. But he says even the work you do on a daily basis, if you're a businessman, be a good businessman, be righteous, be ethical and moral, make the right decisions when you do your work, because that translates into right action. And right action, when it's done without the fruits of the action, which often, let's say in business, is profit. To just keep that in mind, that we turn the act over to Swami, but just weigh the values that you need to invoke to do your job, whether it's truth, morality, ethical behavior, whatever it may be, to keep that in mind when we do our work. And then it becomes righteous action and it becomes service. Similarly, if you have a talent, if you're good at something, you're a good doctor, you're a good scientist, you're a good teacher, do your job really, really well. In fact, he says, make sure that you work enough to earn the money that you're paid. He says, often we say we aren't paid enough, we want more money, we're not getting enough promotion potential. You know, we always complain about these things. But we should look at all of these tasks that he has given us the talent to do. You know, you're a good scientist or a good teacher, a good doctor. Do that work really, really well. And then it becomes service and it becomes part of your life. So it becomes a way of life. So in other words, service is a way of life when it's done selflessly, when we think about every act that we do, everything we say to another person, or every opportunity to help, when we take those opportunities and make sure that we infuse those activities with love and humility and absence of ego, then it becomes a way of life. So in other words, when it becomes a way of life, then the selfless service becomes the primary step towards our liberation, because it really cleanses what we call the consciousness. You know, it cleanses the mind and the heart, and it then leads to a vision of the Atma if we look inside carefully. So it's kind of an integrated process, and the sublimation of service is really selflessness and ego, which leads us to spiritual growth. Sai Ram.
Brother Fies and Dr. Ganesh, relating to the scriptures, can you elaborate on the statement, our life is His message? And Dr. Ganesh, can you go first?
I just said that Swami, His mission is transformation. The transformation, how we perceive the transformation was, initially we are always thinking, His life is His message, and slowly we got evolved and saying that, no, my life is His message. And then, ultimately when you become unity with a God, then the only thing you're going to say is, His life is message, because there's nothing like no difference between you and the God. You are the part of the God. When you become part of the God, you don't feel any, you don't find any distinction between you and the God. You say that His life is message. I'm part of Him. Whatever I am is everything His grace. Whatever I do is His grace. So His life is His message. I'm part of Him. So, To give the little bit of a scriptural description, I'll show you the interview. This is a very nice interview, just very simply. So, Mr. Kanraja, he is very atheist. He is very critical of Swami. He went to Swami to test Swami. And then he was the editor of a newspaper and used to write his seems and articles about Swami and things like that. And Swami said, this is what Swami said, godliness, which is present in everybody, is in the form of a little spark, exists in me as a full flame. And it's my mission to develop every little spark of God in everyone to the full flame. The next thing what he asked was, okay, Swami, are you saying that you're going to raise the consciousness of everybody to the God-like condition to enable them to command their life, their own destiny? Then Swami replies, yes, exactly. So, they would become shareholders of my Sankalpa Shakti. That's my divine power, divine willpower and universal energy. I had to work through them, rouse the indwelling God in them. What really saying is, there is a little spark in you, little spark of Swami is in you. When it raises up to His level, which is not impossible, in the sense, so many people has received that one, then whatever you do, whatever the thought, whatever you see, whatever you think, whatever you do, from morning to evening, is part of become His mission. That's it. Then you start thinking like, no, His life is His mission. That means I'm part of Him. Whatever I do is His mission. So, for that, I'm going to say, when God created the universe, He didn't have any form. He's just a formless. There's only three ways that you can describe the God was Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means eternal. Chit means pure knowledge. Ananda means bliss. The essence of Ananda is like a pure love. Then the Swami came. When the God decided to create universe, from Him, the Virat Purusha came. From Him, then, why God has created the universe? You know, you all remember the Swami's quotation. His intention was, I separate myself from myself to love myself. This is the standard quotation that you all know from Swami. I separate myself from myself to love myself. It is something, it was very complex until recently that made me sense. So, from the Virat Purusha, the five elements came. Ether, air, fire, water, earth. In their purest form, all the five things, all the five elements are incompatible. They cannot mix. Then, God has asked them, no, you have to mix. You have to mix. There's a process called Panchikarana, means they all mix together. As a result, all the three qualities came. Tamasikam, all the three qualities of human being. And entire universe came. Just imagine, just the biggest lesson that you can get it from this one is the unity. Unity in the divinity. So imagine, if the five elements did not listen to the God and say, no, we are not going to mix. That's it. Nothing would have come afterwards. No creation, nothing. And then, relating to Swami, here is what happened. Dr. Reddy's father, Dr. Narendra Reddy's father, had an interview with the Swami. And in the interview, he asked Swami, Swami, you don't eat much. How can you survive, Swami? Then Swami said, oh. Then he continued. He said, Swami, maybe you derive the energy from five elements. That's what he told to Swami. Swami said, no, no, no. I am the one who gives the energy to the five elements. That really tells the power of Swami. That really tells the power. Whatever you see Swami in the physical body is the minuscule part of Swami. The part of Swami beyond the physical body, after the physical body, is unimaginable. Then the next thing happened. Then he decided, okay, let me create the entire universe. So how he created was from the Virat Purusha things came from his mind. He used his mind energy to create the moon. He used his energy from his eyes to create the sun. He used energy from his feet to create the earth. His breath is the air, whatever we are breathing. Rest of the entire galaxy, entire universe came from his stomach. So, if you look at it, I mean, where in the world that you can be there without him? Just imagine, where in the world that you can be there without him? Around him, he's in there, he's above there, below there, in front of, behold. Just, there's nothing. Just him. Then what happened? When he created the universe, earth, he has to create something. So he created this garden of love. This beautiful garden of on the earth he created. In this garden, he had the people, their level is from the animal to the human. He is there, each and every one, and only thing that is the physical body, whatever you see, is the only transient. Only thing that is there in that one is his Atma, which is the eternal one. And then if you look at it, it's the only thing that is unifying force in the visible diversity is him. That is the unity in the diversity. Whatever the thought process, whatever the action that you do, whatever you do, if your actions are based on that unity in that visible diversity, that leads to purity, that leads to divinity. If you look at it, and when he created the universe, then he created the people, animals, and then all the way up to the human beings. One thing God, Swami, has given us is intelligence and asking us to take care of the entire garden, to take care of each and everything in the garden. As opposed to, instead of taking care of the garden, we are using the garden for ourselves. So, if you look at the scriptures, you see the quotations on garden in the Bible a lot. Take care of the garden, take care of the garden. It's essentially saying that is, it is very fortunate for you to take a birth as a human being. You have a power like every other animals, every other creatures in the universe, and you have intelligence, you have the wisdom, and it's your utmost responsibility to take care of the universe. So, that's the biggest responsibility. You know, Swami is smart. He gave the intelligence, and at the same time, he gave the responsibility also. So, now you can see, I separated myself from myself to love myself. That's what the Swami means. But contrary to that, if you look at the entire universe, everything is doing what Swami has said. Rivers are running, giving water to everybody. The trees are giving the fruit for us to enjoy. And cows are giving the milk. Everything is doing their duty as per Swami sent them to do. Except us, we doing the things I think I'm supposed to. So Swami, I think, initially thought, created this, all these people, they're going to love them, they love each other. So the love means, they love means it's not like physical bodies. His Swami is there in us, so we love each other. That means, essentially Swami is not seeing as a human beings and everything. We are part of him, and that's what his concept was. I separated myself from myself to love myself. So if you look at other scriptures from the Quran, La ilaha illallah, there's nothing but a God. The same thing, it is not just in the Hindu scriptures, in every other scriptures is the same thing. It's nothing but God, him, and you are surrounded by him. Thank you.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. 11:55 in the afternoon, and it's a quite hot afternoon here at Prashant Nilayam Ashram, the spiritual capital of the universe. This is the segment Service Love in Action, and I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. So today we are listening to a panel discussion which was held in Mid-Atlantic, New Jersey by Swami's devotees on February the year 2012. So before continuing to listening to the panel discussion, let's listen to few devotional songs. Dear listeners, loving Sairam and greetings once again to today's Thursday Live. Well, this is the segment Service Love in Action, and I'm Raghu from Team Radio Sai. 12 in the noon, and it's a warm afternoon here at Prashanthi Nilayam. So today, we are talking about Florence Nightingale. One of Nightingale's significant achievements was the introduction of trained nurses into the workhouse system in England and Ireland from the 1860s onwards. This meant that sick will be cared for by properly trained nursing staff. Nightingale's work served as an inspiration for nurses in the American Civil War also. The Union government approached her for advice in organizing field medicine. Although her ideas met official resistance, they inspired the volunteer body of the United States Sanitary Commission. In the 1870s, Nightingale mentored Linda Richards, America's first trained nurse, and enabled her to return to the USA with adequate training and knowledge to establish high-quality nursing schools. Linda Richards went on to become a great nursing pioneer in USA and Japan. By 1882, several Nightingale nurses had become matrons at several leading hospitals. In the year 1883, Nightingale was awarded the Royal Red Cross by Queen Victoria. In 1904, she was appointed a Lady of Grace of the Order of St. John. In 1907, she became the first woman to be awarded the Order of Merit. In the following year, she was given the Honorary Freedom of the City of London. Well, from 1857 onwards, Nightingale was intermittently bedridden. A recent biography cites brucellosis and associated spondylitis as the cause. Despite her symptoms, she remained phenomenally productive in social reform. During her bedridden years, she also did pioneering work in the field of hospital planning, and her work propagated quickly across Britain and the world. Nightingale's output slowed down considerably in her last decade. She now wrote very little due to blindness and declining mental abilities, though she still retained an interest in current affairs. On 13th of August 1910, at the age of 19, she died peacefully in her sleep in her room at South Street, London. Her body was buried in the graveyard at St. Margaret Church in Hampshire. She left a large body of work, including several hundred notes which were previously unpublished. Florence Nightingale's lasting contribution has been her role in founding the modern nursing profession. She set an example of compassion, commitment to patient care, and diligent and thoughtful hospital administration. In addition to the continued operation of the Florence Nightingale School of Nursing and Midwifery at King's College London, the Nightingale Building in the School of Nursing and Midwifery at the University of Southampton is also named after her. The International Nurses Day is celebrated on her birthday, that is on 12th May each year. So this was the life and the humanitarian work and career of Florence Nightingale, who made a difference in society by finding, by organizing the modern nursing. So dear listeners, today in this section you can make a difference. You heard about Florence Nightingale. Now let's come back to the segment Service Love in Action, in which you are listening to a panel discussion on selfless service held at the Mid-Atlantic Mini Retreat in New Jersey. And this was recorded on 25th February 2012. So let's continue listening to the panel discussion.
Dr. Indira, the human body is gifted to serve others. Can you share your perspectives on this message from the scriptures?
I want to start out by saying that Swami has said that the human body is a gift given to us as a result of our past good deeds. Human birth is special in that it is the only form in which we can actually achieve liberation. Animal forms of all other forms may have things such as the body and the senses, but it's only in the human form and the body given to us in this way that we have been built that we can achieve freedom from birth and death, and we call this liberation and freedom from bondage. So we need to be very mindful of this fact that it's not just a gift, it's the most unique gift that we can have, that we can be given from the highest consciousness, which is Paramatma, a God. So he has also said that we need to use this body to cross, as a raft, to cross the ocean of human life. This is samsara. And to achieve the goal that he's laid out for us, which is to realize ourselves, achieve merger with the divine consciousness, and to understand really where we came from and who we are. Now, where does selfless service fit into all this? And I think we've heard about it from a number of the panelists here, but I would like to reiterate that selfless service is the first step towards achieving this liberation. And selfless service, again, as I said earlier, it's everything we do, every act, every thought, and every vibration that we send out to the universe. All of this is selfless service when it's done with purity and when it's done in the absence of ego. When we get rid of the ego in this way, or we diminish the ego, then we begin to realize that we are getting more peaceful. We feel more at peace with ourselves. We are more accepting of everything that's around us, whether it's competition or whether it's things that are done to us that we may not feel comfortable with. But we learn to develop patience. We learn to develop compassion. And all of these qualities are what we call purification of our heart, purification of the mind, and of course in the end it's purification of our consciousness, because we have multiple bodies in ourselves, the physical body and the etheric body and so on and so forth, and these are all a conglomeration of thoughts and ego and desire and so on. So in order to reach that end goal, which is, and we do have the opportunity, and of course having had Swami walk the earth at the same time as all of us in this physical form, we've had an extraordinary opportunity to source from that really high energy to develop ourselves individually. And of course when we develop ourselves individually, we develop the community, because we are radiating that goodness, that peace, that bliss. So the human body, yes, it is gifted. It's gifted to serve. And it's the service that we do is absolutely important, because it's the first and the biggest step that we can take towards self-realization. Sarah.
Thank you. This is directed to Dr. Harry and Dr. Ganesh. Having participated in medical camps around the world, what was your take-home message from those visits, and what is your advice to a devotee who is eager to serve but may not be able to participate in such service projects? Dr. Harry?
Sairam. We always talk about doing service in a lot of places, including across the world. I think we always have to, from time to time, really get back to the idea that we don't need to go anywhere. There's so much need here as well, and we can do it at an individual level. Something as simple to going to a nursing home or participating in a church activity or any activity. And I think that itself is service. So I don't think we need to look too beyond, and there's so much in our own communities. But even if you're not able to do something, to me, I always felt that one of the greatest services for my own spiritual growth is being nonviolent in thought, word, and deed. And what I really mean by that is that we always think about, when we're trying to work with each other or doing service, go out and do something, but our mind is playing games. Our mind have all these thoughts about others. I think we have to start controlling our mind, so that thought of indifference or any bad thoughts should be first curtailed. I think that itself, to me, is the biggest service we can do for ourselves and to the persons across as well. The projects that I've been involved in really have helped me really learn about, when we work together as a team, you know, really has taught me discipline, devotion, dedication. And it really doesn't matter who's doing it and who's participating in it, because the effect of that can be so profound. I'll just give you a quick example. When I was in Parthi a few years ago, working in the super specialty hospital, this gentleman who works in the gardens in the hospital comes to me, and he was so touched by the love of the doctors. As I was done examining him, he's looking at me very shy, and I wasn't sure what exactly he was trying to tell me. And slowly he picks out from his pocket, and this is really shows the impact of love, which is a reflection of our love. He slowly picks out a picture of Swami and gives it to me. I was very touched, and then he goes on to tell me a story of what that photo was. So apparently a few months ago, Swami had come to the super specialty hospital to inaugurate the canteen, and they gave, and Swami was there distributing the photos. And this was a picture from Swami to him. And he was so touched with the love of the doctors, of he wanted me to have that photo. And I think it really teaches us all a lesson that these are such simple acts of love that we need to think about. We don't need to go anywhere, just centers in our own lives. Look at each other and think, what kind of thoughts do I have? Yes, I'm talking very lovingly to my brother, but am I thinking lovingly about him? To me, that's the greatest service you can do.
Sairam, everyone. I have been to several countries for the medical camps. And then when you go there, Swami always says, service activities should not be like a part-time activities. Whatever you learn, whatever you see, whatever you feel, whatever you do up there should have a long-lasting impact on your life. that should bring out the transformation in yourself and everything. So I'll give an example, like whatever happened, like in the 2001 when I went to the Zambia, we were supposed to be there. Me and Brahma Sharma from your region, we both went, and then we joined the UK group. So we were supposed to be there 6 days and leave on Saturday afternoon. And then, you know, we really, it was hard because jet lag and everything, we had to work. And so they said that, you know, you've been very busy. Why don't you guys go to the waterfalls? So they made us to leave on Friday evening. So cutting short the one-day medical camp. I don't know that what made me, it is everything is Swami's grace. I must say that it is not like, you know, what, sometimes a thought comes to your mind. We cannot take the credit. It is ultimately Him who gives the thought. So I was so disappointed. I was so unhappy while I was leaving the village, cutting short one day of the week. You would not believe that I was looking at the village. I was going in the car. I was keep looking until it disappeared my vision. And the pain still lasted in my soul, saying that I have to do something. So the pain, say for example, if you sincerely believe whatever you saw, that Purushottam, the meaning of that entire world is your family. If you firmly have a conviction that Swami is in each and everything, entire world is in your family, then you should have the same feeling, whatever the feeling that you have about the world, the same feeling whatever you have with your family. Say for example, I go to the restaurant, I eat something. I'm enjoying the food. If rest of the family, my own family, my blood relatives are not there, I always feel, oh, I wish they could have been here. They could have enjoyed the same life. The same pain should be there when they're there. So the pain is, I sincerely thankful to Swami, because that is the pain as a result of that when the book came of the, you know, I said that I had to do something for that place. And, you know, whatever I did for that, aiming for that Zambia helped me for helping other countries as well. But what I mean to say is, when you go to the countries, when you see the things, it is not just a 1 week of service. The thing, whatever you learn, should be stored as a precious memories in your hard disk. Like how you store it, you just store it. You don't know what comes out of that one. It's amazing that can happen. As long as you have that pain, which is selfless, this is pure, not selfless, it's pure. Like a pure as pure as pure. So that is the lessons, you know, that I told the same thing. My brother's daughter came with me to the Haiti. I told her, no, you should not, you know, 1 week coming to the Haiti, doing the service doesn't mean anything. I mean, we going there for, I mean, what I meant was, we did so much, but what I meant is, in your life. So you really have to take the lesson and store it on your hard disk forever. That's one thing. And the people who are cannot, say for example, the Pakistan thing happened, we all sent some supplies. But at the same time, we were not physically able to go there. We were not able to physically because of the, you know, restrictions. So then, you always feel the pain. I don't know what made me this. I said, okay, I do the Surya Namaskar every day. When I was doing the Surya Namaskaram, I sincerely prayed that Swami, whatever the Gayatri Mantra chanting, you pray the Gayatri for the enlightenment, for wisdom. Give the wisdom, whatever the things, you give it to the things. I used to pray for Middle East and then Pakistan. You would not believe how Swami acknowledges. The interview, the last interview, 24th November interview, Swami came and somehow I was able to kiss Swami's hand, touch Swami's feet several times, just like so many things, that interview. Two things that happened in my mind was about a friend who had an accident, and I don't know what made me to think to ask Swami to show love to the Middle East. The only thing I asked, I don't know what made me to think that way. I'm really saying that one is because not to show that I'm selfless or anything, but showing is Swami acknowledges Swami. That happened even before this Middle East turbulence going on. This thing happened in the November of 2010. Nothing was happening at that. There was something about Iraq, this and that. But all these things in the past 1 year, it is how the Swami acknowledges. Swami, when you think about something, how Swami make it into bigger level. You never know. You just pray. The simplest thing that you can do for anybody is, whoever you cannot do, is to pray. And say, when he says Om Shanti Shanti, that's exactly the meaning of Shanti, three times Shanti. You say one Shanti for around, one Shanti for entire universe. You just, whenever you pray, end of the prayers, you say peace. When you keep saying the same thing, slowly, you become part of it. Initially, you may be saying without meaning it, and slowly, you mean it. You don't know the power of soul. That's Swami told, the power of soul is so strong, like a spark, making it a big flame. The big flame, however long the big flame lasts is different. You know, it's like, you know, once you reach there, it's not like you're going to sit there, you're going to drop again. Because greatest rishis also got back into the Maya and things like that. But what I'm saying is, the simplest thing that you can do is, at least the prayers, if you hold, you cannot do. Sai Ram.
Dinesh, is it okay to feel the pain and empathize with others while rendering service, or should we remain detached?
Yes, like I mentioned just now, feeling the pain in the sense that that feeling has to be there, then the action will come out. Feeling in the sense is not like, you know, shouldn't make you inactive, it should make you proactive and feel the pain with the firm understanding that is a unity in the diversity, whatever I showed. With that understanding, if you have the feeling, then things will happen. The feeling in your soul, based on the scriptures, is very strong.
Thank you. Dr. Harry, this question is for you. What is the optimum level of seva for a Sai center? When do we say this is too much, and when do we say we are not doing enough? And how are we able to constantly stay motivated?
This is a question I think people have asked for years. I'm not sure right answer for any of us to answer this, other than to say, I think, like Brother Mahesh was talking earlier, he said something very profound, I think, and I hope everyone heard him, that yearning to serve, to do something, it really has to come from an individual level. At a center organizational level, these are opportunities which are being provided, and how much you take into it, it really comes back to the individual. Because, you know, you really cannot force love, you cannot force service. So I think it has to really come at an individual level. So in that context, I'm not sure if there's anything is too much. Obviously too much in the sense that if there are centers, I found even in our region sometimes, we have a service activity and then people are talking about other service activities, new ones. It's okay to think about that as long as you're still putting that 100% effort with the activities that you're already doing. Otherwise, we're doing disservice. So once you make a commitment, now you can change that. So what I mean by that is that if there's no need anymore of a particular service activity, you can start another one. But once you're committed to a particular activity, you have to give that 100%. Beyond that, especially if you have a growing center or more energy or enthusiasm, can always, I think, start another one because the needs are plentiful, right? There's so much need that you can find. It's just a matter of our own yearning to do it and how much can we do it. But do it right.
Thank you. Swami says when we engage in seva, we have to be aware that we are going through transformation ourselves. We are the recipient, not the other person. In this country, where poor does not mean extreme poverty, and we live in a predominantly I land with iPods, iPads, and iPhones, how can we, number one, motivate ourselves to do seva, and number two, remember with humility that we are at the receiving end? What practical suggestions can you give to increase this awareness? Brother Pines?
If you look at the structure of the Satya Sai organization, it has an education wing, a devotional wing, and a seva wing. And they all work in unison to develop and to blossom forth in human excellence, the human individual. So if we are looking at service, Swami talks about first acquiring the knowledge of how service should be practiced and given. through study circles and regular study of Sai literature. So this helps to develop our mental awareness, to derive the knowledge to discern what is truth from untruth. Then through the devotional wing, for example, meditation, bhajan singing, etc., it helps us to develop that bhav, that right attitude, that feeling of connectedness to the divinity within the individuals that we serve. And then it manifests in physically serving. Swami has always told us, have the feeling that you are not the doer. When we have that feeling, then we can become willing instruments to really efficiently and effectively do His service. And He gives the example of Krishna and the Murali, the flute. And the flute, when it is very hollow and free from ego, the Lord will take it up at will and blow His beautiful divine melody through it. Similarly, when we are hollow and free from ego, the Lord will willingly use us to do selfless service. So it is important to bear this in mind. When we have the right attitude of service, it can benefit us. What is interesting to note is that if we engage in a lot of service activities on an outward level and there is no inner spiritual advancement, there is no inner transformation, there is no connectedness to the divine, we are merely wasting time. When we can infuse divinity into our daily activities, Swami says, work becomes worship. Otherwise, it degenerates into a mechanical activity. That is why He says, duty without love is deplorable. Duty with love, desirable. Love without duty is divine. So we have to get to that level where our very expression of thought, word and deed becomes a living service in our daily lives, so that every thought, word and deed becomes a service to humanity. So I think it's an internal journey that we can begin with every act. And we can begin by, in our daily activities, dedicating everything we do to Swami. So if I'm cutting the vegetables, you dedicate it to Him. I'm teaching, you dedicate it to Him. I'm driving, you dedicate it to Him. So all our acts, all our thoughts, all our deeds then become transmuted from work into worship. Sai Ram.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Warm welcome once again, dear listeners, to today's Thursday Live. This is the segment Service, Love in Action, and I'm Raghu from Team Radio Sai. Well, it's a warm, warm afternoon here at Prashant Nilayam Ashram. The time is 12:26 p.m. So today in this segment, Service, Love in Action, I played for you a panel discussion on selfless service held at the Mid-Atlantic Mini Retreat in New Jersey on 25th February 2012. Well, before concluding, let me briefly highlight few thoughts that the panelists have shared with us. So, one panelist said that every little act that we do is service. Even when we are sitting quietly having good thoughts is service. As Baba says, service is not for Him, it's for us to grow spiritually. In fact, Swami has said that we need not always go out and sweep the streets as service. Even the work we do on a daily basis, if we are a businessman, be a good businessman. Be righteous, be ethical and moral. Make right decisions when you go, because that translates into right action. So when we do our duty sincerely, service becomes a way of life. In fact, this human body is gifted to us by God to serve the society. As it is said, Paropakarartham idam shariram. Well, dear listeners, with that beautiful thought, let me conclude today and meet you again next Thursday. In fact, the panel discussion which I played today was the first part, so the part two is for next week. So placing this segment at Bhagwan's lotus feet, I conclude. And in a while from now, after a brief interlude, Brother Prem and Arvind will join for you for the next segment of today's Thursday Life, that is Afternoon Satsang. Jai Sai Ram.
Yeah.